Hey, thanks for tuning in. Welcome to Radio Runway's new mini-series, Airports. Each week, you'll be treated to a complete history and future plans for an airport somewhere in the world. This series is made in collaboration with the Thompson Aviation Channel, and you can find a link to his YouTube channel in the description, or just search Thompson Airports on YouTube or Google. Now it's time for story one, Israel's Ben Gurion Airport.
Breaking news, Israel has declared it is at war after a sudden, unprecedented, and deadly surprise attack by Hamas.
On the 7th of October 2023, a multi-generational tension between the nation of Israel and the state of Palestine reached a boiling point, with one of the largest assaults ever inflicted on Israel, specifically by the Islamist militant group known as Hamas.
Stunning developments in Israel as Palestinian militants fired thousands of rockets. The rocket attacks have struck Tel Aviv and areas that surround Gaza. Air raid sirens have also sounded in several other towns.
As the smoke cleared and Israel prepared their response, nations worldwide rushed to prepare repatriation flights to evacuate their citizens now considered to be in harm's way. It made for an intense ensuing 72 hours, with national carriers sending their aircraft to Israel's only international airport equipped to handle unique situations like this. Given the perpetual nature of the tension between Israel and Hamas, Israel has retrofitted their primary airport with an incredible arsenal of unique features, making a mass exodus of foreign citizens like this as possible as it is. And so today, let's put it under the microscope. Let's discuss Tel Aviv's Ben Gurion Airport from start to finish. Israel as a people has one of the longest and most complicated histories of any group in the world. Now, I'm not for a second going to even begin to explain this history, but let's just say that the history of Israel as a nation begins in 1948. But their primary airport predates the nation of Israel, which honestly has to be one of the rarest airport stats in existence. You see, prior to 1948, this tiny swath of land was under British mandate following a series of intense conflicts during World War I. 5 years prior to the beginning of World War II, the British overseers of the region were lobbied by an airline known as Airwork Services, who specialised in primarily defence support services for the Royal Air Force, to lay down an airstrip of two unpaved runways on the outskirts of the town of Lida, which is now known as Lod. The British also realised that the region was geographically suited for an aviation hub and decided that the region did in fact require an airfield. Soon after the two airstrips had been finished, Airwork's true intentions were revealed. The then CEO of the airport, Mr. Alan Muntz, had visited Egypt 4 years earlier in 1931 and declared his intention to establish an airline based in the Arab nation. And so, in line with the completion of Lida's two airstrips in 1935, the Egyptian carrier known as Misra Airwork flew the inaugural flight into Lida as a technical stop on its way from Cairo to Nicosia in Cyprus. Shortly after, Misra would utilize the airstrip as a tech stop for a variety of routes serving the Northern Arab and Southern European regions. In the modern day, Misra looks very different. Egypt Air, the national carrier of Egypt. These routes via the Lida airstrip were so successful that within a year, there was money being poured into the site from all directions. Its initial two unsealed runways quickly became four fully sealed concrete runways. An attached terminal was also constructed to accommodate the first major European airline to open a route into the region, LOT Polish Airlines. This all happened within the first 3 years of the airfield's existence. By 1938, Lida Airport was busy. Relative to the aviation industry of the time, it had a huge number of daily movements, both terminating in Lida and also utilizing the airport as a tech stop en route to a final destination. Most notably, Britain's flagship carrier, Imperial Airways, who would later become BOAC before reaching its current state as British Airways, would fly regular services into the airport. And then came the second iteration of global conflict. The various battlegrounds of the Second World War forced routes that originally utilized Lida as a tech stop to instead terminate at the airport. And as the war became larger and heavier in 1943, the British mandate received directives from England to overhaul Lida's airport into a military outpost to aid the British efforts. The airport was renamed RAF Station Lida and continued to serve as a major airfield for military airport transportation throughout the remainder of the Second World War. And as the war ended in 1945, so too did the military occupation of the airport. Lida quickly returned to commercial regularity, so much so that TWA established a regular transatlantic service into Lida from New York, the very first of its kind. As the end of the British Mandate period approaches in early 1948, Jews the world over begin to lobby for an established Jewish nation within the Jewish settled areas within the Mandate-controlled zone. In part, this push is led by a significant number of American Jews who also garner the support of the then US President Harry Truman.
I had to make a compromise with the Arabs and divide Palestine.
And so on the 14th of May in 1948, the Mandate ends and the Jewish nation of Israel is declared in the northern regions of this land. Almost immediately, the Palestinian people, along with their surrounding neighbours, protested the decision. And the very next day, on the morning of the 15th of May, Palestinians attacked the newly independent Jewish settlements, sparking a conflict that would last close to 10 months. While the Palestinians gained ground over the first few weeks, ultimately the conflict saw Israel not just retain the land that the UN had planned for their new nation, but also gain 60% of the total land proposed for the bordering Arab nation. As part of this conflict, and as a direct result of an offensive known as Operation Dani, Lida Airport fell under Israeli control on the 10th of July 1948. As part of the change, the town of Lida was renamed to Lod, and so too was the airport. In the same year, Lod Airport would become an international gateway into the new Jewish nation. Almost immediately, the nation of Israel established a national carrier. LL was to build its new home of operations at Lod Airport, and in 1948, 40,000 people stopped at or entered into Lod via air. And by 1952, that number had grown to 100,000 annually, as Jews across the globe flocked to Israel to begin their lives as part of the new nation. Over this four-year period, Lod welcomed the immigration of over 180,000 Jews, and given how turbulent this period was, international flights would often be diverted to Dov, the nearest secondary airport, due to a lack of space on Lod's apron. Lod Airport was being pushed to its absolute limits. During this mass migration, Lod Airport was old and run down, and so in 1951, the first major development of the airport infrastructure began. It started with the expansion and renovation of the terminal building, which included the air traffic control tower and emergency services center. The project would take 8 years to complete, and the new facilities became fully operational in line with the welcoming of the first jetliner to fly into Lod in 1959, a de Havilland Comet of British European Airways. It wasn't too long after that that LL wanted in on the jet action. And at the same time, the demand for domestic Israeli flying was growing. At this point, there was only one terminal to serve both international and domestic flying. It was time for a second terminal to house domestic operations. Work began on the second terminal in 1961, finishing in 1967. 2 years later, the terminal was opened, almost immediately being used as overflow for the exponential number of daily international flights into the region, despite the terminal being significantly smaller than Terminal 1. After 5 years of steady growth and movement, Lod Airport faced a slew of challenges, drama and bloodshed through the core of the 1970s. It began in 1972 when, on the 8th of May, four members of the Palestinian militant group known as Black September hijacked a flight en route to Lod from Vienna. The flight landed at Lod to the welcoming party of an Israel special attack unit, and while the incident was defused shortly after, one passenger was pronounced dead. And no less than a month later, three members of the Japanese extremist group known as the Japanese Red Army opened fire with machine guns in Lod's arrivals hall. 24 people were killed and 80 injured in what would later be known as the Lod Airport Massacre. Having been the epicenter for bloodshed in what had been a turbulent month for Lod Airport, the airport underwent a large-scale overhaul of its security and defense apparatus. In the tightly secured precinct of the airport, every vehicle from cars and taxis to buses and trucks began to undergo heavy scrutiny at a newly installed preliminary security checkpoint. Armed guards remained vigilant and would conduct spot checks on cars, taxis and boarding buses, engaging in brief conversations with drivers and passengers. Terminal entrances are guarded by armed security personnel, closely monitoring individuals entering the terminal, and if someone raises suspicion, passengers were now required to comply with a line of questioning to assess their intentions. Beyond the building's perimeter, plainclothed and fully armed personnel patrol, while hidden surveillance cameras operate around the clock. Inside the terminal, a constant patrol is maintained by both uniformed and plainclothed security officers. Departing passengers face personal questioning by security agents even before reaching the check-in desk, with the duration of interviews varying from a minute to an hour depending on those selected for additional screening. Checked baggage was governed by a color-coded system, and a lot of passengers would have their bags screened and checked before they even reached the check-in desks. Most of you are watching this thinking that this is a very standard procedure across the globe, but remember, this is 30 years before the 9/11 attacks that changed airport security forever. These procedures that we see as commonplace in the modern world, were unheard of anywhere in the world in the early 70s. And in reality, the security measures put in place at LOD were unfathomably comprehensive. Then, following the death of Israel's first ever Prime Minister in 1973, LOD Airport was renamed in his honour, becoming what we know the airport as today, Tel Aviv Ben Gurion Airport. In the final months of the very same year, yet another conflict, and a familiar one at that, with Israel clashing with a union of Arab nations in what was labelled the Yom Kippur War. Ben-Gurion remained out of the crossfire for the majority of the conflict, although it did play a crucial role in the delivery of munitions and heavy armaments to Israel by the US. Finally, things remained calm at Ben-Gurion for the remainder of the 1970s, capped off with the construction of what was dubbed the Quiet Runway, as its east-to-west direction meant that jets would cause less noise pollution to the surrounding residential areas. Incredibly, this runway was built to a length of 4,062 metres. To oversee the runway's construction, the airport governance was passed to the newly formed Israel Airports Authority. As the next decade passed by, an already strained system of infrastructure began to hurt more and more. Existing flaws at the airport began to become more obvious as the collapse of the Soviet Union saw increased immigration rates into Israel through Ben-Gurion. In what happened to be incredible timing, a mass migration of Ethiopian Jews began to siphon through Ben-Gurion in droves. The pressure placed on the existing terminals and apron reaches a peak in 1990 that prompts the Israel Airports Authority to commission the design and planning of a state-of-the-art terminal that would overhaul the current mode of operandum. The plan for the terminal was to not only accommodate the existing traffic, but to be modular enough to add newer expansions as Israeli tourism pushed to new markets from the early 2000s. And so in 1994, a structure and design were agreed upon and work began on the brand new Terminal 3. After 10 long, grossly unequipped years of barely staying operational, and following an unexpected bankruptcy of the project's primary contractor midway through the project, Terminal 3 finally opened to resounding relief and excitement in 2004. The terminal was slick. It was nominated for architectural awards. As remarked by the architecture firm responsible for the project, careful consideration was given to the reduction of level changes for both arriving and departing passengers. The ramp connector negotiates the necessary level changes without requiring passengers to utilize escalators or elevators. And so it creates this dramatic gateway to the country with arriving and departing passengers sharing the space. Departing passengers check in and descend through the connector into the rotunda and down the concourses to their gates. Arriving passengers ascend through bridges at the gates to a mezzanine level overlooking the concourses at the rotunda, then descend towards passport control through the connector. It truly is an incredible space that not only has form but genuine, sorely needed function. The scale of the new terminal quickly relieved the existing aging infrastructure and gave it a much needed break. In the same year, a renovation of the primary and quiet runways began to prepare it for a future increase in wide body movements. Finishing in 2007 and equipped with an instrument landing system that was then activated in 2008, the new look runway only needed another 3 years before it was then closed for a 2.5 year period to extend its length to 3,112 meters, as well as an overhaul of the existing taxiway networks adjacent to the new terminal. At the same time, the original terminal that at its core stood at the land of the original Lida terminal site underwent significant improvements and was then converted into a fully domestic terminal. As it stands today, Ben-Gurion Airport has three runways, 1230, the primary runway, 0826, the quiet runway, and 0321, the short runway, used solely for military operations. The airport's two existing terminals feature a well-equipped domestic terminal known as Terminal 1. The shining beacon of Israel's modern civilian aviation port is Terminal 3, which, prior to the initiation of a new conflict, was predicted to take in just short of 25 million passengers in the year of 2023. Terminal 3 also features extensive parking facilities and an airport hotel adjacent to the west of the terminal. The grounds of the original Terminal 2 now act as an international air freight hub. The story of Ben-Gurion Airport is one of continual pause. The airport sits on hostile land. Throughout the life of the airfield, it has changed hands, changed governance, acted as a forward operating base, become a welcoming party for hundreds of thousands of Jewish immigrants, and expanded to a scale appropriate to welcome in millions of tourists and pilgrims each and every year. What was once an airstrip with the sole purpose of a technical stop for airlines en route to somewhere else now sits proudly as the national airport of Israel. Thanks for listening to episode 1 of our new airports mini-series. Tune in to Radio Runway next week on Friday at 5 o'clock for episode 2 of our 10-part mini-series exploring some of the world's airports. If you'd like to see the accompanying video to go with this audio, you can check out the Thompson YouTube channel. Type in Thompson Airports in Google or YouTube to get to there. Thompson has a whole series of videos about airports and airlines alike. For all things Radio Runway, check out our Instagram @RadioRunwayPod. And until next week, goodbye.